This is the TTY Dialer, episode 38, for the week of July 17th through July 22nd. Hello, welcome to your weekly companion to WRVO's Old Time Radio Show, tuned to Yesterday. I'm Mark Lefonier. Every single night of the week, we bring you Golden Age of Radio shows like Westerns, dramas, comedies, mysteries, and much more, all in your theater of the mind. And that's from 10 to midnight on our main station, with a second stream of Old Time Radio at WRVO2 found at our website. In this podcast, I bring you a look at the shows coming up for the week, fun with sound from radio's yesteryear, and a bit of radio history.
Now, I'd like to send a telegram myself. It's addressed to a man named Case, who's so cross, they call him Crank Case. No, really, they do. And here's the message. Quote, understand you always frown. Stop. Let me tell you about a man who was as grouchy as you, but who now is all sweetness and light. He used to have trouble after trouble with toothbrushes. Scratchy ones gouged his gums. Droopy ones bogged down on his teeth. Then he tried a Pepsodent 50 Tough toothbrush. It's the brush that makes people glad to brush their teeth because it feels so good. The nylon bristles are gentle, not scratchy. They're springy and alive. And 50 Tufts of them are united to clean teeth better than they were ever cleaned before. Get a Pepsodent 50 Tough toothbrush for every member of your family. And with every brush, you'll receive a cash certificate worth 10 cents extra spending money. A 10-cent bonus for you. And now, straighten your tie, because we're off again on that date with Judy.
That was a commercial for a show called A Date with Judy. It was a sitcom for teenagers on the air for about 8 years. First heard as a summer replacement show for the vacationing Bob Hope. Now, the year of that commercial was 1942, and with Bob's ceaseless work entertaining the troops during the war, vacation probably isn't the right word. At any rate, the show presented an interesting situation with the sponsor of Hope's program, which was Pepsodent, as they continued their sponsorship in the same slot on the air, but for a different age of audience. Typically, when a show took a summer vacation, the network would pick up the tab and sustain that show, so the advertiser could get the most for their investment. But with Hope's show drawing nearly 30 million listeners a week at the time of that commercial, it kind of stands to reason that Pepsodent would hold on. And that 10-cent coupon offered in the commercial wasn't exactly nothing at the time, about the equivalent of $1.50 in today's money, the cost of an early comic book issue of A Date with Judy, which would end up having a longer run than the radio show. It was in print for 13 years, starting in 1947. So, if my math is correct, someone spending that 10 cents on one of their comics would actually have to wait 5 years from getting that coupon before doing so. This Monday night on Tune to Yesterday on July 17th, it's Comedy for an Hour from broadcasts of Fibber McGee and Molly, and It Pays to Be Ignorant.
Myself, I used to sing in Madison Square Garden.
Well, wait a minute. What did you ever sing in Madison Square Garden?
Peanut, candy, popcorn,
At 11 o'clock Monday night on the air, it's True History for an Hour. We the People from 1940 with special guest Joseph Dunninger. Then the Hallmark Hall of Fame brings us the story of Antonio Stradivarius from 1954. On Tuesday night, July 18th, drama from the Hollywood soundstage. Then The Marriage with Jessica Tandy and Hume Cronin. At 11 o'clock Tuesday night, crime from The Whistler and Dragnet. Here are these shows Monday and Tuesday, July 17th and 18th from 10 to midnight on Tune to Yesterday. One of the movie's most reluctant gangsters was born this Monday, July 17th in 1899. James Cagney, or Jimmy, whose first gig at the age of 20 was dressed up as a female and dancing in a chorus line, would become one of the most feared and admired men on screen, particularly with his performance as Irish mobster Tom Powers in 1931's The Public Enemy, where the then controversial but now famous grapefruit in the face scene was shown. After the release and its success, Cagney was quoted as saying, "I'm sick of carrying guns and beating up women." But the pay and publicity of the gangster picture kept him at it, and he made many movies with that tough guy act, including roles like Brick Davis in 1935's G-Men. He was actually nominated for an Oscar for 1938's Angels with Dirty Faces for his role as Rocky, What Do You Hear, What Do You Say, Sullivan, and one of his more violent characters, Cody Jarrett, in 1949's White Heat. To paraphrase Cagney, once a song and dance man, always a song and dance man. He may have danced around a lot of bullets on screen, but he was also an award-winning singer and actor in comedies and musicals. winning his only Best Actor Academy Award for 1942's Yankee Doodle Dandy, the story of playwright, composer, singer, and actor George M. Cohan, with Cagney's portrayal of the artist approved by Cohan himself after learning of his talent that stretched back to the vaudeville stage. That movie actually became the second highest grossing film for Warner Brothers in 1942. And at this point, he was immensely popular among audiences of all kinds, as his versatile range had a little something for everyone, from the Hollywood tough to the lead in a dancing review. So it's no wonder that he was invited to radio as a special guest to be interviewed, but several times in acting roles, too. As early as 1933, he was featured on Rudy Valley's variety show in a one-act play.
You and I have admired his sharp, vital characterizations in a series of Warner Brothers pictures, from Public Enemy to The Mayor of Hell and Footlights Parade. It is my privilege to meet him in person for the first time this week out on the Warner lot in Burbank, where he is making Air Chaser. I want you to meet him now, ladies and gentlemen, the little man with the big punch, Jimmy Cagney.
From comedy and drama, everything in between as well, like entertaining the troops on the air during the Second World War, Cagney shed his well-known gangster persona for most of the time on radio, unless the part called for it, of course. And here's a bit of what he sounded like from a memorable performance on Suspense from December of 1948, where he played the driver responsible for an accidental hit and run.
And just then, the first body swung into view. And you could hear everyone in the crowd suck in his breath. And I bit down hard on my lip till I tasted blood. A brown blanket wrapped neatly around something. And then the bundle rested on the ground. And everyone seemed to edge away from it like it could hurt them. And the cable went down into the valley again. And then there was a second bundle. And then there was a third. And then a fourth. And over like a drum beat, like a prayer, I told myself they wouldn't break me down. And then someone pushed forward from the crowd. Joe Mandel, the little tailor. He seemed shy and embarrassed, as though he had no business being here.
Chief Blake.
Huh? Oh, yeah, Joe.
My boy, Philip, he didn't come home for supper tonight, and I...
You want to look?
Well, you know how a woman is. Rose will feel better if I tell her, okay, I looked, and it wasn't... Well, you know.
All right, Joe. Doesn't hurt none.
Thank you. No. I'd better go back to my Rose.
Sorry, Joe, I... Wait a minute.
Yes?
Do you know who Phil was going to be with tonight?
His best friend was Mike Roebuck. They were always together. The Goldust twins, everybody called them.
Thanks, Joe.
Excuse me, Chief. I must go to Rose now.
Fraser!
Yes, Chief.
Get back to town. Go over to the Roebucks. Don't tell them anything is wrong. Just see if Mike's home.
Okay.
Couldn't take anymore. I started back for the car. My legs felt like they weighed a ton. I heard a sudden movement in the crowd behind me.
Oh, no! Oh, my baby! My baby!
They wouldn't break me down. They wouldn't break me down. I opened the car door. And Eve was there. I'd almost forgotten her. And I was sure she knew the truth.
They brought up all four?
Yeah.
Harry...
I don't want to hear anything now. I'm taking you home.
Wait, Harry.
Listen, I'm telling you.
Kiss me, Harry.
What?
Hold me and kiss me. I'm such a stupid fool. Hold me.
All right. Now stop it. Stop it.
Harry, if you knew what's been going through my mind.
Okay. Stop it.
Just a fool. A stupid fool. And then when I saw you come back to the car, the look on your face. Oh, Harry, how could I have ever thought...
All right. Now, we'll talk about it later.
I'll never talk about it again. Never, Harry.
So, it was all over with. I was going to be okay. God, I wasn't proud. I felt rotten and sick. And now that it was all over, the strength, ran out of me like water running out of a glass. But what good would it have been to crucify myself? It wouldn't have changed anything. I wasn't a bad guy. It could have happened to anybody. And now I was going to be able to take care of my own. Eve and my kid brother Teddy. Was that a bad guy? A fellow who wanted to do right for his family? I started the car. I put in gear, and then looking at me through the window was Chief Blake, signaling me to wait. I turned the key off. Well, whatever it was, I was very tired.
Come on out, Harry.
But I've got to get Eve home.
Come on out of the car.
But...
Harry, do like I tell you. Come with me.
What do you want?
Come with me. You drove up here tonight. I didn't think it would end like this.
You know about it?
You, of all people, Harry.
Listen, you've got to believe me.
It shouldn't have happened to a fella like you.
You've got to hear my side.
Right here, Harry.
Huh? Huh? What are you...
Take a look at this fourth body.
Why should I?
Pull the blanket back, Harry.
Oh, no. No. Teddy. Teddy!
This Wednesday night on Tune to Yesterday, July 19th at 10 o'clock, it's Adventure from Douglas of the World, a short series for Armed Forces Radio, then Dangerous Assignment, followed by a request from one of our listeners, the Theater Guild on the Air, with the play The Silver Whistle from 1952. That's for an hour of Broadway. This Thursday night at 10, horror from Murder at Midnight and Quiet Please. Then a sort of a mix of horror and science fiction as Suspense presents a two-part story called Donovan's Brain with Orson Welles from 1944.
July 31st. Charlotte's romanticizing, of course. The Delta pattern is so infinitely complex that it'd be utterly impossible ever to break it down into specific words, yet that it understands me, that it's trying to communicate with me, is certain. Charlotte suggests mental telepathy, that I try to make my mind a blank, as the mediums call it, while at the same time increasing the energy content of the plasma that feeds the brain in the hope of stepping up the brain's electrical potential as one would step up the power of a radio station. Naturally, telepathy is nonsense, but the feeding theory intrigues me. I shall try it.
Make a plan to hear these shows Wednesday, July 19th, or Thursday, July 20th. They're live on the air from 10 to midnight, or you can listen live as we play them at WRVO.org. This Saturday, July 22nd, is the birthday of the prolific and seldom underbilled writer Stephen Vincent Benet, who on radio wrote among the most patriotic broadcasts heard on the air. He was raised on military posts, as his father was an officer in the Army, and through that experience he formed a sense of patriotism well before he attended Yale and started his writing career in Paris, where he met his wife. He produced work there that would later be the basis for the movie Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, if that rings a bell. And in the caliber of radio writer Norman Corwin, or Arch Obler, let's say, Benet's radio debut came in the form of a play set during the American Revolution, a story called Paul Revere, which premiered on the Columbia Workshop in 1936, featuring a different angle on Revere's story. And following that play, a lot of doors opened for him to produce more plays that brought a look at our citizenship from the perspective of the past, like on the Cavalcade of America show, where he composed a portrait of the early days of the U.S. and Canada, and a story on that series called Listen to the People that framed the reasons for the country's Independence Day in a poetic way. Benet was a poet, and early in his career he had penned the Civil War-themed poem, which was a stinging rebuttal to all acts of war, called John Brown's Body. He received the first of two Pulitzer Prizes for that work, which would also be adapted several times on the air, including one group from the Northwestern University Radio Workshop that presented it as a radio impression. From his adaptation of a written but never delivered speech by Franklin Roosevelt on the Columbia Workshop, to his story of a Jewish academic traveling the plains in his play Jacob and the Indians on the Eternal Light, Benet's work was celebrated on the air for his imagination and thoughtful prose with well-known characters. During World War II, many authors did what they could to keep morale high on the home front, and Stephen Vincent Benet also pitched in with a six-show series working with the Council for Democracy and the NBC Red Network called Dear Adolf. It was presented as a series of letters from an American housewife, played by actress Helen Hayes, a laborer portrayed by Jimmy Cagney, a soldier by William Holden, and the man best known for portraying Abraham Lincoln in the movies, Raymond Massey, who played an American farmer in the first episode of Dear Adolf, which we'll hear some sound from now.
Dear Adolf, this is me. This is me, one American farmer. 6 million farms and over in this country, last census. 6 million places where we can raise food for freedom. Food for the men on the ships and the men in the planes. Food for the boys like my boy in his soldier clothes. Food for Ed Summers' boy on his destroyer and Gus Taub's boy over in his tank plant. Food for all kinds of folks I'll never see in my life who are fighting on our side. My farm's just one of 6 million. But I want to say this. We're all against you, Adolf. Every bushel of wheat in this country is against you. Every furrow we plowed this spring, we plowed against you. Every time a hen lays an egg, that egg's against you. Every time an Iowa hog puts on another pound, that pound's against you. Against you and all your works, because we don't like you. And can't stand you. And we're bound and determined to get rid of you, whatever it costs us all. Ever think what it means to rouse up a free people, Adolf? Guess not. You see, we farmers don't talk much, never have. You can read in the papers about us, parity prices and such, but that's politics. That isn't our story. Our story's weather and land and the things that stay. The wind around the corner of the barn and the lambs in March. The look of a well-lined field and the reason a man likes to grow things. The reason it's a satisfaction. The reason a man will put up with hail and drought and blight and blizzard and corn borers, put up with them and cuss them out and fight them all his life and get through somehow. Just because he's got a fool idea in his head that that's what he was born to do. You hitched up the wrong horse when you thought that farmers can't fight, Adolf. Farmers are used to fighting. They fight every day in the year. You can call us cantankerous and slow to change. You can call us independent, too, because that's what we are. Our own government's found that out, and you're going to find it out, too. We're labor and capital, both. We got everything to lose if you win, and we know it. We didn't pay undue attention to your goings-on across the water at first, though we didn't like the way you took on about races and such. We don't ask if our neighbors are Aryans. We just ask if they're good neighbors. And when you started spreading all over Europe like a mess of tent caterpillars, well, it looked for a while as if other folks could do the spraying. But Pearl Harbor and the way those Japanese beetles acted just touched us off. Now we're mad. We're mad, and we're out to get you, Adolf. Get you and your pals, every one of us. And when we say you and your pals, we mean just that. We mean this Mussolini that you got cooped up in Italy like a broody hen. That's a way for a man to act, isn't it? And those smart little sons of heaven that took their farms away from the Chinese. We don't like that sort of thing. We don't mean to stand it. And most of all, we'll be immortally damned if we have it here. Sorry, Mother, I just lost my temper a minute.
Coming up on Tune to Yesterday, this Friday night, July 21st, it's Westerns. We'll hear Dr. Six Gun and Gunsmoke. Then a sitcom hour of Blondie and the Great Gildersleeve.
Well, I'll let it cook just a little longer. It's beginning to look like a stew, all right, though. Ought to be good. Put everything in I could find. Let's see. Potatoes, leftover meat, succotash, a few pig's feet. I think we used to put pig feet in mulligatawny stew. Let's see if I missed anything. What's that over there? Some rhubarb.
On Saturday night, July 22nd at 10 o'clock, it's another hour of Westerns from Tales of the Texas Rangers and Luke Slaughter of Tombstone, then sitcoms from the Aldrich family and also Our Miss Brooks. So these shows are on Friday, July 21st and Saturday, July 22nd from 10 to midnight on the air on TNT Yesterday. And also, remember, you can look at our monthly schedule that's posted at the website, so you can just make a plan or just keep listening to the TTY Dialer to find out what's coming up during the week. Now, I do have a question for you that was suggested by one of the fans of the Dialer and tuned to yesterday, Chuck Williams. Thanks again for writing in, Chuck. And he would like to know, and so would I, how did you get your start listening to old-time radio? You know, a lot of us didn't grow up necessarily during the period when it was actually on the air. And if it was, maybe, you know, you guys were watching television instead. But when did you discover old-time radio? What's the story behind that? I'd like to hear it myself, and I'll share mine next week on the TTY Dialer podcast. So send me your story. It doesn't have to be very long, and I'll read it during the podcast here. So just email me, mark@wrvo.org. That's mark@wrvo.org. All right, I hope you listen to some of the shows at least this week, and thanks a lot for listening to the TTY Dialer. I'll be with you again next week.